You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Being Friday, it is time for film. Get your thinking caps on. Holiday films. Josh Nelson joins me. You can check out his work at filmology.com. It is spelt with a PH. Hi there, Josh.
Good afternoon.
Now, I feel like I'm on holiday. There are people behind me sipping beer on the riverbank and basically ignoring the fact that it is still a work day for many of us. If you get a chance to come down to the river, do.
It's a hard life.
It is a hard life, but let's treat it as a holiday. Why are we talking holiday films? What's Force Majeure?
Force Majeure is a Swedish film. It's not your traditional holiday film in the home for the holidays, right. National Lampoon's Vacation okay. style.
This is no Home Alone.
No. So it's a Swedish film about a family holidaying in the French Alps. And earlier on in the film, the wife and the husband and the two kids are having lunch in an outdoor restaurant. And there's a controlled avalanche which gets dangerously close
right.
to the restaurant. And the father hightails it out of there and leaves the wife and two kids as they get covered in snow. Not mortally wounded, covered
yeah,
in snow,
okay.
just sort of briefly dampened. And this spur of the moment act is the kind of catalyst for raising questions about their relationship and
okay.
sort of the fragility of
oh, that's a nice
the family
for
unit.
A film.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So this Swedish director, Ruben Östlund, he's been working since the 1990s and he started making skiing documentaries and now he's sort of moved through documentaries and short films.
So he's the Warren Miller of Swedish film.
Well, yeah, it's strange that he's applied what is almost like a Michael Haneke style, you know,
right.
that middle class suburban family removed from their setting and suddenly it all starts to crumble, that thin veneer of security.
Yeah, right.
It's an incredible tense film and it's beautiful, like it's really polished as well, but
so it's intense family drama, I assume.
Yeah, it is. It's very much in that. There's a really unnerving undercurrent to this film, and I think it plays on that fragile line of how quickly just one simple act, spur of the moment decision, can sort of crumble everything. But not only that in terms of the family unit, but what's interesting about this film is the way in which this idea of what should I have done, what would I have done, starts to spread to their friends who are on holiday with them as
yeah.
well. Actually, probably the only actor I was familiar with before this film, you're a Game of Thrones fan.
I am.
You remember the orange-haired, beardy guy, the wildling
man? Oh, yeah,
man?
He's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, he's
plays, Swedish.
He's Norwegian,
I think.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
So he plays one of the friends who comes along
okay.
and they have a very awkward dinner party where the wife, who's struggling with what the husband's done, decides to kind of bring it up and then shows the iPhone footage and look what my
brings
husband...
Brings it up at the dinner party?
Yeah.
Oh, how awkward.
But yeah, incredible score as well. The other thing that struck me about
hey,
this
nice,
film...
Hey, nice Beaujolais you've got there. By the way, my husband deserted me when there was an avalanche.
Yes.
Isn't he a bastard?
Exactly.
Right?
And keeps trying to force the husband to confess that, yes, he did abandon them. And he's saying, no, I didn't run away. You know, there was no running away. But most of the film is shot in wide angles. There's very few close-ups in this film. And I think part of that strategy is to have the audience observe these characters in a critical manner and I guess, places the question back on them, what actually took place. And
so are you seeing the response of one actor or one character while the other is talking
well,
a lot?
I think it aims for contemplation and observation over like an emotional connection. It doesn't
yeah, okay.
try and lead the audience to feel sympathy with the husband or the wife. It keeps almost that critical distance with the camera. And I think that's a really smart technique, but it really plays into that undercurrent of... Oh, I'm not quite sure I like where this is going and,
right.
and how this is panning
out. So it's
out.
Not a comfortable film to watch.
No, look, it's been pretty well critically received across the world. It did well at the Cannes Film Festival. I think it won the jury prize at Cannes. So it's been slowly doing the festival circuit and now it's got a limited release here in Melbourne.
Okay, so and where is it on?
I think it's three cinemas. So Rivoli, the Cinema Nova and maybe the Coma, one of the Palace cinemas as well.
Okay. And all relatively unknown actors and directors other than the... Game of Thrones extra.
The Game of Thrones. I mean, it's
okay.
terrible. That
no,
that's my,
okay.
my point of reference.
That's, it's certainly the thing that we're all familiar with, so that's fine. So a good film, though.
Yeah, I really recommend it. Like, you know, that character drama, that interesting question, you know, I think it's something you can kind of relate to, particularly that, you know, like I said before, that thin veneer of how quickly a relationship could crumble. It's not maybe a date film, don't you? if this is date night with the wife or the husband.
You don't specialise in date films,
no,
do you?
I really don't.
Not at all. Look, it is... it's Force Majeure. I don't know why I'm asking for your best vacation or holiday film off the back of that, but look, 1300 222 774 is the phone number. You can come on down to the river and tell us your own suggestion if you wish. If you're nearby, maybe you're heading off to Flinders Street on your way home or on your way into the city, come and join us. Just a few of your suggestions on the text, which is, of course, 0437 774 774. Weekend at Bernie's. is one suggestion from Nicola, apart from National Lampoon's Vacation, of course. Vacation. Josh, when was the last time you watched Vacation? Is it still good?
About 3 years ago, and that was part of my Chevy Chase retrospective on the back of Community, rebirth of Chevy. It's dated a little. I think actually Christmas Vacation might be my favourite.
So they're still good?
For their time, for what they do. You know.
I mean, I'm not saying I didn't laugh when I saw it. I wonder how they hold up.
Yeah, the whole dog peed in the picnic bucket joke doesn't really kind of hold
and the
weight.
And the Christie Brinkley driving the car and Chevy Chase making faces.
Seems
does
to
that
pop
work?
Up in almost every film.
Exactly.
They kept bringing it back, yeah.
I just wonder if the original has any power left.
Not really. It's better than Vegas Vacation, though. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Oh, actually, Cheryl saw Force Majeure last night by accident. Because they got the other movie time wrong. Great mistake. Loved its slow build. So there you go. And hey, Raph, Deliverance, The Holiday from Hell. And Monsieur Hulot's Holiday and Summer Holiday. Yes, I remember watching Monsieur Hulot's Holiday. Look, if you've got a favourite holiday film or vacation film, hopefully it's a little bit happier than Force Majeure. But Force Majeure sounds very, very good. 1300 222 774. We're enjoying the sunshine. Come and join us, if you wish. We will find out more of your holiday films. I think Bad Boy Bubby has been replaced by a different film that is getting a consistent mention whenever Josh Nelson joins me on the radio.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, live at the Melbourne Festival Hub, you're with Raphael Epstein.
Call now on 1300 222 774 or text 0437 774 774.
Well, they've got the sausages on the barbie and Tuba Skinny are preparing. So the festival part of the afternoon is about to kick off. But I want to get onto your holiday texts. Josh Nelson, film guy, is with me. Shirley Valentine. And Mandy's actually nominating the Rhonda and Kutut's Bali Holiday as a holiday film. I don't think we're going to accept it. Are we going to accept advertisements?
Has Film Victoria funded that? Yeah. Is that the next big thing?
One Crazy Summer with Demi Moore. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
What was that?
That was a formative film of my youth. Let's put it that way.
She was beautiful and good-looking and young then, was she? Okay, yes. I think that's a reference to Demi Moore, from Heath. Little White Lies. It's a French holiday.
Yeah, Marion Cotillard, speaking of gorgeous
women. Oh, right, okay. Marion Cotillard. And the film I mentioned that's replaced Bad Boy Bubby, Raph, staying in Europe, the original European version of The Vanishing started with a road trip pit stop. So, yes, The Vanishing is rapidly replacing Bad Boy Bubby. It applies to every film category and was a similarly horrific and psychologically scarring kind of category that Josh and I like to squeeze in every Friday afternoon. 23 minutes to 5 o'clock. There's quite a few more texts here, which I will try to get to in a moment. Have you got a favourite film movie before we get onto the new Japanese animation?
I was actually going to nominate the Marion Cotillard one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's it about? Do you recall?
A group of friends that I think it's on an annual basis. They trek to one of the wealthier friends' holiday house. And it's a bit like Force Majeure. It has that same trope of, you know, the... All the issues that have been under the surface in their day-to-day life suddenly come out when they're all in the same group and outside of the day-to-day life.
Okay, so that is Little White Lies?
Yeah.
Little White Lies. Okay, that sounds good. I might catch that. And does a honeymoon count? No. And the Rocky Horror Picture Show, that's not a holiday film from Dillon in Oakley South?
Maybe someone watches it on the holiday.
I suppose they're on their honeymoon, so it's kind of like a holiday, sort of. I don't know. Okay. We've got the trailer for a new bit of Japanese animation. It is from the same... It's from the...
Studio Ghibli.
Studio Ghibli. We've got the trailer, which I want to hear, but give just the brief setup to the plot so that we can all make sense of the trailer when we're listening.
Okay, I'll do my best. It's based on a 10th century tale, the tale of the bamboo cutter. And it opens with a bamboo cutter...
A story you're familiar with, of course.
Yeah, of course. Intimately. He's out in the forest, he's cutting bamboo, and he slices one open and he finds a thumb-sized girl inside the stalk of the bamboo, and suddenly she magically starts to grow, and he takes her back to his elderly wife, and they basically raise this girl, and then, at a certain point in the narrative, they relocate to the city with all this wealth and try to make her the princess that he assumes she's destined to become.
Okay, have a listen to the trailer for Tales of Princess Kaguya.
You're such a beautiful little princess.
Oh. That kid's weird. She grows fast, like bamboo.
Have you gotten bigger again?
Yeah? You think so?
I have heard the rumors about her.
Oh, my.
If disobedience to His Majesty is considered a crime punishable by death, well, then, the only choice is to kill me.
There you go. That is the Tales of Princess Kaguya. Yeah, from Studio Ghibli, without the master at the... Is this the first one from them without...
Well, this is the most recent, but there's been a number of directors in the Ghibli studio. So this is actually from Isao Takahata, who did an incredibly moving film in 1988 called Grave of the Fireflies,
right, which
is harrowingly beautiful.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen that. Sounds good.
This one doesn't have quite the same resonance, and it's done in a very different style to the Hayao Miyazaki ones, which I think most people are more familiar with. It's a curious film because... The detail that people associate with the Miyazaki films, and we talked about one earlier this year, The Wind Rises. This is more an abstracted form of, an impaired back form of animation. So the backgrounds are sort of half-finished watercolours. The style of the faces varies from bare minimalist to detailed, and even the Princess Kaguya character herself alters quite drastically over the course of the narrative. But it also gives the film license to play with some almost wonderful sort of expressionistic and abstract sequences with movement and so on, with sort of pencil and hand drawing.
Is it actual hand drawing or is it computer? Because it looks like it. There is no electronic hand in sight.
Yeah, no, I get the sense that this film has been in the works for something like 12 years, from what I've heard about the film. The film is actually playing at Cinema Nova as part of the Studio Ghibli showcase, so a number of his earlier films, a number of the Miyazaki films, and they're showing the Japanese version with English subtitles. I find it difficult to watch these films with the Americanized voices.
It's hard,
so that was completely foreign to me, the trailer we
played. Of course, because you watched the subtitle version.
Japanese version. Yeah. But some interesting aspects, and I think that it took me a little while to get used to the different styles of animation. I'm sure there's levels within this tale which are a bit lost in translation, particularly the way they caricature the various male suitors that come to marry Princess Kaguya later on in the film. And it also has a deeply sort of philosophical element to it that, well, I think a lot of the Ghibli films do, where it plays off this idea of mortality. Is she a mystical princess? And her connection to the natural world as well. I mean, the environmental themes have been in the Ghibli studio for a long time, and this one's not dissimilar in that regard. And I think the interesting point here is that it differs vastly to the traditional fairy tale that you see in the Walt Disney takes on the princess tale. And the ending of this film is really fascinating and won me over, even though I didn't feel the strong emotional resonance or the emotional connection.
So not the same sense of magical wonder of some of the other Studio Ghibli films, but still really interesting, beautiful...
In moments, like there are sequences here that definitely play out on that magic realism register. But in terms of Takahata's early film, Grave of the Fireflies, which just left me shattered and was about two kids at the end of World War II, sort of struggling to survive, this film didn't quite have that emotional pull. But look, just from an aesthetic point of view, this is a really fascinating work and very different to the other Studio Ghibli films. And I think it's worth pointing out, because people have the perception earlier this year that Ghibli had folded. Mm-hmm. I think it's more an indeterminate status of the studio. They were downsizing, okay. But the rumours of it's closing down, it's finished, it's done, I don't think that's actually taken place yet. Okay. So there's still hope we may get some more interesting films down the track.
And this one's worth seeing?
Yeah, I think definitely. And at the cinema too, because of that kinetic visual style that we get, this year works well on a large screen.
Let me read this text though. Raph, you must read this. Please, 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 please. I don't usually read the map, but I will. The Way, Way Back with Toni Collette and Sam Rockwell is the best must-see holiday film of the 2010s. Toni Collette and Sam Rockwell. The Way, Way Back. Heard of that one?
I have heard of it. I haven't seen it. I think it involves a pool. And I think Rockwell's like a lifeguard or a pool guard. I think it's a coming-of-age tale. It's woven in there as well.
And worst weekend away ever, The Evil Dead. Yeah, indeed.